don't take these things so personal anymore, anymore. I don't think it's irreversible anymore. Somebody put it in the house. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Is the one and only. Yes, world. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
You guys are listening to Carolyn Joe Show. Hey. Sorry I'm a little rusty. It's been a little bit busy, but we are back. Sorry for that delay. My name is Joe Carabe. I'm definitely in the band Monday Mistress. I'm a filmmaker, a photographer, a writer. You know, what do I do? I do it. Why don't you think about it? Just I do it all, I guess. And across from me, one of the greatest people I've ever met, one of the greatest artists, one of the greatest creators, one of the greatest minds that you ever see. Her name is Karen Bilewski. How you doing, Carolyn?
I'm doing good. So speaking of doing it all, like you say you do,
yeah.
The panel that we're going to present today to the audience, you actually moderated. So add that to your list of things that you do.
I do too much. That's what people think. I don't do enough in my own head.
Well, how does it feel like to moderate panels at AwesomeCon? Because you did a whole bunch.
I think it's great. I really enjoy doing that.
Becoming a host.
Yeah.
Of sorts.
A host. I never knew when I was growing up that I'd ever be a host, but I guess that's what I sort of fell into. And I think it's fine. I enjoy it a whole lot.
Yes.
I enjoy it a whole lot. But you know what? This other side of the table, this isn't the first time we've done this. This has been many, 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 many moons in which we've done this. How many times have we done the other side of the table?
I haven't counted, but I think we did it at New York Comic Con for like 3 years. And we did it at AwesomeCon before, and I think maybe a couple other times, but I haven't really counted. But yeah, we've definitely done it like a handful of times. But you know what's cool about the other side of the table? Is that we always bring on different people each time we do it, so we get a lot of cool perspectives and different perspectives on what it's like to be on the other side of the table. Because a lot of questions I get when I do these comic shows is like, oh, how do I do what you do? You know, I do comics too, but I've never exhibited. And how do I do that? And how do I get my comics out to the people? And that's what people want to know. So that's why we created this panel. It's called The Other Side of the Table, Lessons from Creators. And we bring it around to a lot of comic shows. If they give us panel time and panel space, it's a really great opportunity to be able to reach out to other creators that are in usually their first steps of their career. So it's really a way to maybe share some of your mistakes that you've made earlier and make sure other people don't take your same path, but because everyone's going to have their own path. What works for one person might not work for the other person. So that's what is really difficult about. A lot of people want like the surefire answer of like, oh, how do I get in, you know? And it doesn't really work like that all the time. So it's like you have to find what's right for you. But I think there's a lot of great, great tips in each one of our other side of the table panels that we've ever had. Like each one is totally different and it's totally live and raw. So you don't know what type of questions you're going to get or where the conversation's even going to go.
And speaking of live, I know this time was a little different because what we had advertised didn't actually happen. We had a little changing of the guard, a switch, right?
Oh, yeah, because we were originally going to have Dawn Griffin, and she actually had a problem with her knee. So we had a switcheroo out, and she recruited Chris Flick of Capes and Babes. So he was actually amazing on the panel. It was great that he could join us, pretty much like a last moment thing, because Dawn couldn't even make it to AwesomeCon. And I'm glad that Chris was able to step in and save the day. And also, we had Brian Turner this year. He works on a lot of really cool stuff. He does Ultimate Spider-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And not only that, I'm going to give him a quick plug because I actually just backed his Kickstarter today. He just released a Kickstarter with Identity Studios. So look that up and please pledge to their Kickstarter because, man, it's a great bunch of people. It's four people, and they are making their own independent comics with this Kickstarter. So, you know, they did have a step into a lot of IPs that are very popular, and so now they're creating their own stuff, which I think is totally awesome and support all of everybody's ideas that aren't necessarily stuff that you've heard of, but it is cool to work for stuff that you heard of, but also people have their own stories to tell, so I think that it's really cool that they're branching out to Kickstarter to raise some funds for that. And of course, I was on the panel as well. And I do comics too. As you may or may not know, I do a comic called Curls. I do Black Magic Tales. And I'm working with Joe on a new comic called French Fry Club. So you get to learn about our process. And Joe asks a lot of really great questions too. And we get some insight from a lot of really cool people. And we're all actually based in the DC area, so it's good to get that feedback. I know Chris lives in Virginia, and I live in Virginia, and Brian lives in Maryland. So get that feedback from that DC area creators. And without further ado, let's get to the podcast. So this is The Other Side of the Table, Lessons from Creators, live at AwesomeCon. It was recorded on Sunday, June 5th. So enjoy AwesomeCon 2016.
And we'll be right back after this panel. Enjoy.
So to my right is Chris Flick. Hi. I'm Chris.
Where's that hologram technology?
Come on, Tupac. Come back. And then, but to my right is Mr. Brian Turner. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello.
Thank you.
And yes, he is also a comic book hustler as well. He's done so much work. Right now, you're working on DC superhero girls. That's what's happening.
Yeah, I'm actually. I'm doing comics and storyboards. So I'm doing storyboards on DC Superhero Girls. I worked on Ultimate Spider-Man. Now I'm working on a new Spider-Man show, Guardians of the Galaxy, all that kind of fun stuff. I've worked on Samurai Jack, Ninja Turtles, Fanboys vs. Zombies, all those fun things. But the cool thing is now it's things are coming full circle. So I'm going to be working on my own book coming out. So we're going to do a Kickstarter in July. So
amazing!
I'm really excited about that.
So you're at the conventions hustling just like we are.
On my grind, man.
On the grind. And then next to Brian is also Karen Pilewski, who, if you guys don't know, she's the cartoonist of the. She's one of the official cartoonists for the White House. She's on the board of the DC. National Cartoon Society. I thought there was a bridge in front of you. You're on the board for the DC National Cartoon Society. You have your comic strip Curls, Curls Studio, and we might have a podcast together secretly.
Yeah.
Wait a minute!
What?
It's exciting.
Surprise guest.
Surprise guest.
That was from the side, right? Nobody goes before you
start. Chris Flick has arrived.
Chris
building.
Flick. But first, let's also give, in conjunction, Carolyn an applause, too.
Make sure you know 9 and not 5.
Chris, how many waters do we have on this table?
Not enough.
Not enough. And yes, Carolyn is also a comic book hustler, too. But we already announced you, Chris. Do you want to do your own announcements?
Yeah, okay. So my name's Chris. I'm at table M4. I do a comic strip called Capes and Bades about a crazy werewolf that hangs out at a comic book store called Capes and Bades.
And there you go. And he's also a comic book hustler. All right. So every single time, I'm so used to asking this question every other side of the table panel. I always start with this. We'll just go down the line, starting from Carolyn and then towards me. So what do you feel is the perception of a comic book creator, and what is the reality of a comic book creator?
Well, I think there's two different answers. One is a more mainstream answer. I think a lot of people think of comics as superheroes, DC, Marvel, you know, the mainstream stuff, movies, everybody knows all that. But then there is another side to comics that is not necessarily mainstream, that people might know, that's more of an indie side, more of a, I don't know, how many of you all have been to Small Press Expo? One hand. See, there we go.
Oh, two and a half.
Okay. Yes.
Three.
Okay, so if you don't know about that, I'll just let you know. It's a different convention. It's in Bethesda, Maryland, so it's still close by, and it's in the fall. It's really exciting, and a lot of really independent creators that do comics that aren't necessarily superhero comics, because really comics is just a medium that could be anything. There can be recipe comics, there can be romance comics, there can be comics about, well, there are too many comics about how much everyone's day job sucks and, you know, stuff like that. So really it's just another way of storytelling, and I feel like everybody does have stories inside of them, so that's the cool side about comics that isn't really brought out that people know of. There is also a third level of like comic strip artists who, like a Garfield type thing that might be mainstream that people know about. And as far as like people's perception about a comic book artist, I feel like on one hand there can be like this glamorous level where, you know, you see, well, I mean, Stan Lee is a writer, but some people think he's an artist, apparently, in the mainstream culture. But I feel like people think that all those people are really well off and doing very well and all that. But the real matter of it is that it is a hustle and a struggle, even for the people that are our heroes, the name people that we know, the people that have lots of name value, like a Frank Miller. He worked very hard to get where he's at, and it can happen to you, but also the flip side is it's basically like a lottery, like a story lottery or an art lottery. Everyone can be out there creating it, but maybe one or two people might, you know, have that glamour life that everyone is imagining. So I think it's important to know what a cartoonist is. A cartoonist and writer and, you know, artist, comic artist, we're really just out there trying to make the best stories we can, sitting at the drawing table a lot, and that is the life, and also going to conventions, I feel like, really help, because then that way you're not always at the drawing table, you're in front of people, you're putting yourself out there, and that's why we have this panel. It's all about being on the flip side of what you see out in AwesomeCon right now, the struggle that is behind the table.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Ryan, top that, man.
I can't. But I can try to speak to the actual tabling experience for me. What I've come to realize over the past decade or so that I've been doing this is that a lot of the fans, especially this new influx of fans based on what Marvel and DC has been doing, like say in the cinematic universe and things just generally pop culture, bringing in these new fans into comics, they really don't have a clue what comics are. So they come to your table and they see all your books and, you know, if you have prints or whatever, and they're like, this is cool, who does this? They don't realize that you're the creator there. So you explain to them, oh, this is my book, or I've worked on this, and they're like blown away. And they don't, to my experience, a lot of them don't generally have the want to read a lot of these comics. But if you can convince them, to pick up a book that you've worked on or one of your personal books and read it, they'll come back to you. I've had people come back in the same show or see me at another show. I'm like, dude, that was really cool. I'm in the comics now. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think that's the new influx of fans. They just generally don't know. It's just like, oh, look, TV, there's Captain America and all this stuff. It must be cool. Let's go. And then so when they come to you, it's nice to have an intimate moment with an actual creator to kind of rein them in and say, hey, you know, we're creators, this is what we do. We do storytelling. You might not know it. You can read these, you know, you've got your books, your novels and stuff that you read, but you can read these and get that same kind of really nice storytelling, and you've got awesome art to follow it, and you just create new fans and a new general interest and stuff like that. So that's been the most fun part for me. It's like making new fans and introducing people into storytelling. And just having them, like, you know, come along for the ride and continue on that ride, really.
Okay, so for me, it's a little bit different. I mean, I'm not really into, years ago when I was in high school, I was interested in being a comic book artist. But as I progressed from my art career and graphic design, I realized exactly how hard, how time consuming, and how little pay there is. So in some things, I mean, a lot of unless you're a really, really big name, you can make money in comic books, but for just starting out, I fell in love with the comic strip form. So how many of you guys here are webcomic fans? So yeah, that's where I am. So from a from a creative standpoint, that's where I get my kicks. I can do it really fast. I can tell a story in 3 to 4 panels. I can crank them out pretty fast. And then when I go to shows, I'm a huge comic book fan, but I use the conventions to express my fanhood, do it by doing commissions. And the book you see up on here is just a collection of all my strips. So after I get 200 strips done in the can, then I start putting them in book form, and I try to get people to buy my trade paperback. So that's how I approach things.
So since this panel is literally about like the wonderful experience of being behind the table, one of the first lessons that I learned was communicating with the people who are passing by, or the challenges of trying to get them to even stay at your table. I'll start with Brian. How's your pitch for your book or your characters like developed over the years, or just your interaction? How you started? Were you a person that was just like, I'm going to be back here drawing, and then one day you're like, I need to actually communicate with people? How did that change?
Well, I've always been pretty good with communicating with people. Back in the day, I started out doing caricatures, like live caricatures, so a ton of interaction with people. So I'm kind of used to it. So when I started doing tables, it was just natural for me to, to interact with people and kind of draw them in. And just kind of hook them into my product or whatever I'm doing. So,
do you have sort of a technique that you did? Do you stand? That's one thing. Do you stand or sit?
Okay. Well, it depends. Some people don't like it when you stand. Some people do. I'm a fairly big guy, so if it's a, and you can kind of get a feel of who you're talking to. If they're kind of timid, I'll just stay seated and just kind of first introduce myself and then say, hey, come on in. This stuff's not going to bite. I've got I've got lots of stuff you can take a look at. And then once they decide to come over, I'll talk to them more, engaged. Then some of the guys they stand, I'll say, I don't know, 5 feet away from your table, and they're just like, I'm not gonna come to your table no matter what. I'll stand up and, you know, maybe crack a joke or really, really try to talk to those guys to get them in, get a smile and let them know that I'm a friendly guy. You can come and talk to me, so, yeah.
What about you, Carolyn? What have you learned throughout this process?
Well, I found it very hard in the beginning. I've been, I guess, touring the comics for about maybe, I'm not good at math, maybe 8 years, you know, or so. So, but at first, I was totally, like, unaware of how you had to talk to people, because we're artists, usually, and we're just, like, sitting drawing, and then I'm like, oh, I have to talk to people. Like, it took me, like, the first year was kind of hard, but you just learn from my experience. Like, you do have to interact with people. You can't just, I mean, I wasn't like not talking to them, but you can't not interact. You have to actually make a conversation and get them interested in what you have to offer. A lot of people are really unwilling actually to pick up a book in front of you. So sometimes one technique I have is if they're already looking at it and you know they're already interested in it, I will actually pick it up and flip through it for them. And then their hands will come out and then they'll pull it in and look at it themselves.
Yeah, they're actually afraid to touch anything on the table a lot of times,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's kind of funny to actually be on the other side. You wouldn't think that would happen. Like, because I don't know about you, like, I might actually pick something up personally if I wanted to see what's inside of it, you know? But most people don't. I find that interesting. Just really like the interactions and the human dynamics of being behind the table are sometimes very odd. So it's cool because then that way, by me flipping it open, it shows like A, that don't be afraid of it, and B, this is what's inside of it. And they usually want to see more, and I'm like, yeah, you can flip through anything on the table. So invite them in, and then that helps create the connection right there, and then they usually ask a question or something, and then it just leads to conversation, so it's great.
Now, Chris, I've actually been across from you at many conventions, and I don't know if you've seen this guy work, but you've had people like 10 feet away, and just have this magical ability to be like, come back.
These guys are my bread and butter. It's a 4x6 postcards, and every year I make a new one. I always have new art on it, and I have some kind of humorous joke, sight gag on it. Like, how many Deadpool fans do we have in here? How many Rocky Horror fans do we have in here? How many Deadpool As Frankenfurter fans do we have in here? There we go. You get my card. So yeah, These are my bread and butter. I was a caricature artist too. I come from a theatrical background, so I am no way an introvert. So I love meeting and greeting people. And basically, I just hand my postcard out. Hey, you want a free postcard? And it's fast, it's quick. They get the joke real fast. There's not a dialogue on there, so people don't have to spend time reading it. They can. It's like a billboard. How many, you're driving by a billboard and you see a joke. How many times have you gone to south of the border and you see those signs, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Pedro says, hot today, chilly tomorrow. That's what this is for me. So I say, hey, you want a postcard? And if I get them to laugh at the postcard, then bring them, hey, if you laughed at that, maybe you'll laugh at my book. Maybe you like some of these prints. Maybe you like a commission, you know, all that sort of thing. This is my bait. So yeah, I'm very, I'll go back and forth. I'll stand up, I'll sit down, stand up, sit down. But I'm very interactive with people because that's why I love doing shows, because I love meeting and greeting people. Some ways it could be kind of if you have anybody been to Las Vegas, you know, hey, come to the bar, come to the bar, come to the bar.
They got these throws like.
Yeah, yeah, I don't try to do that. I just try to be very, very, I leave it up to them. Hey, if you want this, if you want it, do you want it? No, no, no. Okay, no problem. Hey, come on over. Let me tell you about my art. And a lot of times, you know, the art, I'm very cartoony, so a lot of the visual stuff, people are already laughing. If I can get people to walk by and they're laughing at something, hey, come on over. And so I'm more like an inviting, hey, my house is open, come on over.
Yeah. Now, not to mention, Chris, like, we're all at home, we're working on our stuff, like, it's us. So when we have this chance to do shows, we're all about, like, hey, there's more people out here in the world than, like, yeah, you know, whatever office we're working in and stuff like that.
So. I want to get a hat. Somehow, I always have a baseball hat, but I want to get something that says, so when I'm doing a commission, disturb the artist, and I'm wearing it so people can actually feel comfortable talking to me. You have to get used to, when you're doing a lot of commissions, you have to get used to bobbing your head up and down, making sure, because people also don't want to disturb you if you think you're drawing, but I have no problem stopping and interacting.
Now, here's a fun question. I don't even know if I asked this on the other panels we've had this for. Rejection, like, how much should people be, like, how much should they expect? Like, for who people who are behind the table, should they have a thick skin? What's the mindset for when they pitch their stuff? Should they be ready for it? What tips do you have for people? Let's start with Carolyn.
Well, I think grow a thick skin as fast as possible, as much as possible. The thicker, the better. Because I don't get, like, straight up rejected or anything, but there's times where it's just awkward, where, like, I'll be looking down or something, drawing, and then, like, all of a sudden, like, I know that there's someone at my table. I usually wait a few seconds to make sure they're not just walking by. But, you know, if somebody's actually at the table and stopped, you know, I'll look up and just be like, hey, how is it going? And, like, friendly with a smile and all that. And then they get scared and they literally just run away. And I'm like, what? I'm not, like, a monster.
Worst is when they don't even respond. They just look at you.
Yeah. But, I mean, there are some, you just gotta really feel what the personality is that's coming up to you. There are going to be people that will just run away no matter how friendly you are.
Yeah.
Even if you just say hi, they'll be scared and run away. I don't know what the deal is, but I guess comic book people, I don't know. But, you know, I don't want to, like, generalize that all comic book people are like that, but because they're not. But there is a segment of population that will just be really scared. And, yeah, that, I guess in a way that is a rejection. But I just have to, like, laugh it off and be like, all right, bye, see you later. Like, I've actually said that to people, like, as they're leaving. I'm like, bye, you know? So, you know, just gotta have fun with it and don't really grind it. Like, the first year, like I said, might be really hard. The first year exhibiting for anybody, even if you're an amazing artist, I think is gonna be hard. Because you have to know what it's like behind the table. It's gonna take at least a year or two to even be comfortable. In my experience, unless you're just very, if you already come from, like, a sales background or something, you might do better. But as from an artist, writer, creative person, most people don't have that sales background. So it's more of, like, just being behind the table. The more you're there, the more comfortable you are, as with anything.
Oh yeah, just
Well, from my experience, you definitely experience rejection and, you just have to be ready for it. I mean, just expect at least half your people to really not be interested in what you're doing. Or you can treat it as that 50% of people, I just have to work harder to get them to like me. I feel if kind of like what Chris was saying, if you can kind of like my personality and what I'm digging, and you might be willing to check out my art and stuff like that. And if not, fine. At least I shook a hand and met somebody new. And you'd be surprised that some of these people, if they take your card or whatever, they might come back to you later, like when they feel more comfortable. Once they've got the whole gamut of all the artists that they want to see and check out all that artwork. So you just try to talk to as many people as you can and hope that most of those guys will, maybe pick up your work or maybe become a fan at least later down the road. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm a professional web and graphic designer by day, so I'm totally used to getting criticism. So any kind of criticism I get at conventions is like a nothing. But you do have to kind of have, I'm also an ex-athlete and played a defensive back in football in high school. So when you get burned, you gotta have a quick memory. So yeah, it sucks sometimes when you say, hey, you want a free card? No, I don't want free card. But by the time a person walked away, I've forgotten about that, because there's 10 other people right behind them that say, oh yeah, I'll take something for free. As soon as as soon as you get a negative reaction, there's 5 more positive reactions, then you totally forget about it right away. So any kind of criticism I ever got at a convention pales in comparison to anything I got professionally. So when your boss criticizes you at work, it's like, and somebody at a show goes, I don't like that art. It's like, okay, no problem for me.
So I will start with this with you, Chris, on this question, because you have also a pretty interesting table setup. How important is table setup?
Oh, I could talk a lot about that. I treat
or
my
keep
table.
It, keep it delicious.
Yeah, I'm gonna condense it real quick. So I treat my table like a shop. That's my mentality. That I don't treat it as a table. I treat it as my own little store. When you go to a convention, so I'm always thinking about how I'm gonna be displaying. I'm always tweaking. I'm always trying to figure out how I get the most on my table without making it look clutter. What I call a thrift store look. Mm-hmm. Where it's just everything on the table. I'm really, really, I'm very meticulous. And this is how crazy I get. My books are on one side of the table, so I have two banners. I have a Chris Flick illustration banner and a Capes and Bays banner. My Capes and Bays banner has to be on the side where my books are, because that's visually connecting the books to my banner. And then everything else on the side of the table is all my commissions, sketch cards, things like that. That's my illustration side, so that's where my illustration banner was. So even yesterday when I got set up, I turned around, took a picture of my table, realized, oh, my banners are on the wrong place, I gotta go switch them. So that's how meticulous I get about my banner setup.
What about you, sir?
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. Like sometimes it varies show to show. I mean, most of the time the layout is fairly simple for me. I'll have my page work and a nice big portfolio, like, kind of like what Chris was saying, like illustration work kind of flows into the books that I work on, kind of flows into any kind of prints that I have. So, and the background behind me, I just have a simple banner. I see all these intricate, pipes of, these 15 feet walls, and that's just not me.
Yeah, me either.
That's a whole nother thing that I can talk about, but for me, I just try to keep it fairly simple, and then judging on the flow of the traffic, because a lot of these shows are different. You know, I might switch it up depending on what side I put all this stuff on. But it's pretty simple. I mean, not too much goes. I don't try to have like too many layers, like you're saying. Just nice and simple, so that people can come in. They either look down at your table or they can look up. I have on the table. I have a small like a cage setup of some of my prints and stuff like that. So just keep the line of sight simple, so you don't have to do this whole kind of thing and wonder what the heck is going on.
But you have a skirt, or do you bring your own skirt?
I do. I try to dress the table up a little, just to deviate away from the simple white or black.
Yeah.
So I've got like a stripe thing, so it kind of draws your eye in, stuff like that.
Yeah,
so.
I have a black and red.
Yeah.
Black and red are as two strongest color things in design. So I have a black tablecloth and then another red one that goes right down the middle. So it looks kind of like a racing stripe.
Yeah, love it.
Gives some variety.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that, Carolyn? Because we do a different color scheme as well.
Yeah, we have a blue color scheme usually. We mix it up. My goal in my heart is to have a different product at each convention, because then, first of all, that motivates me to make new stuff. So that's a good tip. It's hard though, because I know Brian just came off of 3 weeks in a row.
We did
Tidewater in Virginia Beach. Then
yep.
there was MegaCon in Florida. I was not at, but Brian was at. And then now we're doing an awesome con again together. So it's like that's heavy, man.
Three
weeks of conventions, that's intense.
And MegaCon's 4 days.
Yeah.
Right?
It's all the way 4 days. But I had to get my Disney in too. So.
Of course. I mean, if you're gonna be down there, you know. So yeah, it's intense to do that. So obviously if you have that type of schedule, you're not gonna have a new product every week for that type of event. But yeah, if it's like if there's like a month or two gap in between, it'd be cool to like have a new product, even if it's just a fun thing. Like I do little button packs sometimes. It's just like a new thing, because you get repeat customers that come by and they're always like, oh, so what are you up to?
Exactly.
What's new that's been there? And if you don't want to be like, I don't have anything new, you know, so then you can at least be like, oh, we have this new button pack. It's something small that you can do in a month, that, you know, in between conventions if you have that gap time. And then as far as the table setup goes, so, you know, I guess one tip would be having that new product. And as far as the table setup goes, it's really just like feeling it out each time for us. I feel like Chris, you have like a good setup. Like I know
Thank
that you.
You
like
Chris
stuff.
Goes upwards.
Like Chris
goes up.
Yeah, I obsess about
Chris,
my table.
You're like a study of that. You know, like I know what you're doing there. So I don't really go as far as Chris does necessarily. Like I do, you know, put it out nicely on the table, but we have a variety of things. I don't really necessarily have it as much as a store as much as
you. I do have a question for you though.
Uh-huh.
Did you purposely plan to color coordinate your table with what, because your dress was matching your
yeah. I sometimes will fashion up my look to match my table.
But Chris,
and I
what
have,
about the colors? You got this
yeah,
color scheme
the color
too.
Scheme. So basically, I have like a.
Brian, are you color coordinated too with your?
I'm not.
It depends how far you want to take it. You know, you can have fun with it. I even have like a dress that was made that's a curls dress that has my characters on it with this type of blue turquoise color, which, you know, I don't know. This color just for me like took off, and I feel like it really represents all the comics together. So I was like, okay, this looks good with our stuff. And another thing that I've just kind of noticed recently within the con circuit within the past maybe 1 or 2 years is this, because I had a back and forth with the banner names, because when we were starting out, our banner names only had the names of our books, like the Legettes or Black Magic Tales. We had those banners. And then, yeah, you know, I started just noticing like people were just putting up just their name, because after a while if you start to have more than one book, you know, how many banners am I going to have up there with the book names? So then I was like, should I be calling the whole table Carolyn Bolefsky? Like I felt weird putting my name out at first. In fact, here's another mistake that I've made that you can learn from. In my first books that I was printing, I didn't even put our names on the front cover. Like, I had it on the inside in, like, pretty small print. Because I don't know, not that I didn't want to put myself out there.
Did we think, like, oh, are we big shots? Are we going to put our name on the cover?
Yeah, I was like, I'm not at that level yet. Like, people don't know who I am, so I'm not even going to put my name on the cover. You know, like, now I'm like, that was so stupid. But I was like, I don't know, I just wasn't as confident as I am now. So, definitely put your name on the cover. I mean, maybe it doesn't have to be screaming like Stephen King or something, you know, but put your name on the cover of your books, okay? Learn from my mistakes. So that's why we have this panel. So yeah, so for a while I was like, do I really want to have a banner that's like, Carolyn Bolefsky's here? You know, like, it's just, I feel like you do, like, because, you know, Chris has his name plus his book.
Oh, I have mine. So, I'll tell that in just a second.
Okay.
I have mine all plastered.
Yeah, so now I have, you know, Carolyn Bolefsky, Girls Studio. So I feel like people know, and I feel like that is always an evolution of banners. I think we have like 4 banners now. Like I said, we've been doing it for 8 years. So about every 2 years, I do get a new banner just because people see you over and over again. And sometimes it's good to have a refresh. You just gotta feel it out and see what works for you. And that's another thing. There's no set rule to be like, you have to use your name or you have to use your book. Sometimes you wanna promote your book name. And there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes you might wanna have your name. I don't know, you just gotta really feel it out and see what's
working. Yeah, that's a really good point about the whole thing about you have to make your own decisions about are you gonna go to the show and promote your business, or are you gonna promote your name, and how are people going to find you easily? Or I mean, I always put my name under Capeton Bays, but then a friend of mine suggested, well, maybe you should put Chris Flick of Capeton Bays, and maybe people will find, you know, so it's always a little balance. You always have to, I go back and forth on that too, but I'm so married to Cape. Back in the day, web comics was always about, oh, you got to get your strip out there, strip out there, strip out there. So that's why it's always been Capeton Bays for me.
Yeah.
But now for my book has my name big old plastered on Flick, because when you have a last name as Flick, I was ridiculed and teased all through high school about having a name that rhymes with a whole bunch of different words. So, and back in the day when comic books were the newsprint, you couldn't print Flick as a sound effect because the printing technique was so bad, the L and the I would run together, so you literally could not print Flick. So when I decided to make my first book, that's exactly the name I was going to make. So I made a series of books based on that.
That's cool.
I couldn't tell if some people were stretching or raising their hands for questions. Does anyone have a question? Yeah, all right, cool.
So for me, I'm coming to the table and actually doing it, doing content stuff. For me, I sort of feel bad coming to talk to you, like knowing personally that it's not a lot of work or stuff, that's financially, I don't have the money to support everybody at the time like I want to. so what do you guys recommend when it's like, I might not approach you, because unless, and maybe you can, like unless you sell them 1,000%, I just like don't have the cash to, hey, I want to support you right now. What do you recommend somebody like
that? I recommend on my table, we have like items that are like $1. So at that point, it's like, I mean, you will occasionally be like, people will walk by and be like, I love your stuff, but I have like no money. And then I'm like, it's $1, you know, like, and I'm like, you paid to be here, I'm sure you have money. And I know that that's their excuse, like, they do want to show, like, their support, but then that's when you give them just a card and be like, hey, check it out online, you know, this is my, at that minimal, then at that point, you can just, there's, like, on the back of my card, there's, like, sample strips, and they can have that for free, and then that's what they walk away with. But, you know, I mean, there's going to be all types of excuses, like, people will give you why they don't want to buy your stuff, even though they love it. So most people are like, oh, I'm just walking around, just try and check this out and see what's, you know, and there are people that come back.
Yeah.
They really do just want to see what's out there first and they'll come back.
Yeah.
But I think it's good to have different price items on your table, because there might not be somebody that can afford a $25 book or a $15 book, but they're willing to pay $1 for a button. So then that way they're supporting. And there will be some people that are like, I have nothing. So I'm like, I have nothing for you. So, you know.
Yeah, real quick. Each one, go through some phrases, your favorite sort of phrases that you heard, like, oh, I'm still just browsing. Like, what are some of the things people can expect to hear from potential customers that don't want to buy something?
My costume doesn't have any pockets. that's probably one out of every four people.
I'm just making the first round. I'm browsing. Yeah. I'm gonna all come back.
I'm getting them all together, so when I do come back on Sunday,
I'm on a budget right now. So,
I mean, you're gonna hear all.
They
this
never stuff. Come back. Well, sometimes.
But yeah. I would say 9 out of 10 do not.
I don't know, but I feel like half people come back.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not half, but like maybe 25%. Maybe one out of four maybe might come back again. But
I know, Carolyn, for us, one of our least favorite types of rejections is when like the kid really wants it, really wants like to get the book or anything on all the stuff on the table, but then you literally see like the mom or dad just pull them away.
Oh,
like, no.
Yeah.
Don't touch.
We'll come back. We'll eye contact. Yes. Yeah. But
well, also that's happened too with there's been guys with their girlfriends, and the girlfriend will like stop and look, and you know that she wants to like really look at it, and then the guy will just pull her. I'm like, oh, let her look, you know. So, but it happens.
Yeah.
I was worried about this year when I decided to make the Deadpool Frankenfurter thing, because I'm in kid section a lot. I didn't know how that was going to go around with parents. But it's been amazing at Tidewater. I was giving these out to parents, and they were handing them to the kids saying, check this out. I'm like, okay, I guess it's okay.
Yeah, a lot of things go now. Yeah, and it's cool, like, because most of us, we do all these area shows. So And someone in your instance, if you're like, dude, I literally don't have any money. I'm here to just scope things out or whatever. It's fine. You know what I mean? Take our car. Or yeah. Like Chris has, I don't have them this show, but I do postcards as well. And they're essentially like mini prints.
Yeah.
So you can give those out and people are like, oh, dude, I can have this? So you give that out and you're like, yeah, I'm going to be at this show down the street in a couple months. Maybe that person next time is willing to drop $5, $10, $20 on you.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's all about recognition too, because sometimes people will see you show after show, and they might not buy something like the first two times they see you, but then the third time you might, because you start to see the same faces sometimes at these shows, and you know that they've like you've had some type of interaction with them before, and maybe like the third time they'll be like, oh yeah, I remember seeing you at this show, and then they'll buy something because just from I know in marketing. I don't know the exact number, but they say, like, you have to see something, I think, like, over a dozen times before you actually buy something. So that's why, like, people are like, oh, why does Coca-Cola need to advertise? Everyone knows what Coke is, but it's, like, it's just another recognition, just another reminder of who they are. Mm-hmm.
Did you have a question, Miss? I saw, did you spread
it? I think Brian.
Oh, that's okay, good.
Pen names? I'd say, like, if you do want to keep your own name under wraps, and if you feel like that's important to you, use a pen name. But there's no really rule about you have to use your own name.
Yeah, it's just how it's all how you start presenting yourself. So, like, when I started, I'm part of Identity Comics Studio, and my two friends in there, they called me Flash because they have a relative named Brian. And they're like, I just can't call you Brian because you look, it doesn't work. So they call me Flash. And so I just started using that as my art name. And then when we started doing tables, I would always use Brian Flash Turner. And so like a lot of my fans are just like, Flash, what's up? So it just kind of stuck. Mm-hmm. So it's really up to you. If you want to do it, start out that way if you're comfortable with it and just keep going with it.
You, sir?
All right.
What was it called?
Pleasant Thoughts.
Pleasant Thoughts.
All you got on Twitter.
Oh, cool, man.
So, what would be your advice for somebody, they've just started the comic a little bit ago, they want to set up a table, would you say start small, like a smaller con, or is there like a way to go about it, or is it just like different for everybody?
First of all, how many conventions have you attended just as an attendee?
As an attendee, about...
Okay, so you kind of know like the vibe. I feel like if you have enough stuff and you are really gung-ho about it, I feel like you could maybe do like a medium to large show. I wouldn't necessarily do something like New York Comic Con right away.
especially if it's going to be all about you and your art, no. Because I mean, that's just a pop culture event, which most of these shows are.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're prepared, if you have, like, some fan art that you're going to push along with your personal product, then sure. But like she was saying, New York Comic Con, that's just going to be heavy to walk right into.
I would start out as small shows. Like, you know what is so crazy? I look back in the past few years, and, like, I've exhibited at bowling alleys, churches, like...
You've been all over the place. Yeah.
Well, we started when this was like a little.
Yeah, AwesomeCon was just like in the registration area.
And stuff like that.
There's like a fire departments. Yeah, like all these little places, and you can find stuff or like hotel, little small hotel conventions. Yeah. Like
one day shows are good.
Yeah.
Because you make good money. It's very intimate. People are in there specifically for new art and stuff like that.
So you can get a lot of celebrities.
Yeah, exactly. So you're not competing with all, again, the big pop culture thing. People are in there strategically looking for new art, new artists, and stuff like that.
Yeah,
those big conventions, those are like final boss level challenges.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You got to get that strength. You got to get that strength level up. You got to get all your arsenal. Because when you're at those bigger conventions, people are really... They want to stop at your table, but there's just such a wave of people that are already pushing them.
Yeah, I mean, you got to imagine, so like even here, people have dropped hundreds of dollars on these celebrities. So by the time they get to you, their pockets are thin. So are they going to sit and listen to you pitch your personal product? Maybe some will. So that's the competition you have to think about when you're thinking about doing a show. Smaller, less days is definitely...
Plus, it's a great way to get your feet wet because not everybody has the experience to sell right off the bat. And so it's really great for beginners to do a small show, get used to interacting with people, not a whole lot of pressure, not a whole lot of financial commitment either, because small show tables run between $25 and $50. Great way to you know, get your feet wet, and you, if you don't have a whole lot of stuff, you can start building up. I didn't do that. I've been going to conventions as a fan for many years, and in Baltimore I would go every year, and I'd come home and I'd be like, man, why am I not getting behind a table?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then in 2007 I just said, screw it, I'm doing it, and I went to HeroesCon with the idea that I wasn't going to make any money. I was just going to go there for the experience. But I had such a blast. I got the convention bug right away.
Yeah.
I'm in this.
Was that your first show?
Yeah, 2008.
I remember you there. And I remember you were like, can I take a picture of your table?
Yeah. See, that's exactly what I did.
That's what you do. You look at people, seriously, like, you look at people's setups and stuff like that. Like, dude, what did you do?
Did you do a container store? Did you get that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, going back to the how anal retentive I am about my table, that's exactly what I did, because I knew I didn't have any experience. So on preview day, I walked around the whole convention floor, and I just took nothing but pictures of other people's tables, so I could go home and learn and look at them and say, oh, that's a good setup. Ooh, I like that.
Yep.
And I love your toaster.
Studying.
Your toaster was always something I was like, oh, I got to do that. Stand-ups. I tried stand-ups. It worked okay for me, but then it got to be a pain to put my werewolf in a stand. I mean, screw that. But you try, you do a lot of trial and tribulations and trial and error, and just, but that's exactly what I did.
You know, it's fun to see, though, too, like, if it's a three-day show or a four-day show, if you watch people, you can see that some booths, like, they change it for a day. You do that? You're like, my stand-up's not working, I gotta take this down.
Oh, yeah. Like, early on, again, like, jumping into some of these big shows, probably prematurely, you know, it's intimidating, because you might see somebody across from you just, like, throwing up $100 bills, like, and you're like... what am I doing wrong? So you're like, oh man, let me change this up. But you know, a lot of times you kind of just need to breathe and let your situation kind of, you know, take care of itself before you drastically change. But yeah, I've done that before, changed up my whole thing. So
the other thing I would say too is that if you do a show and you don't do well, go back to it anyways.
Yeah.
You keep going back to the stream. So it's just like Karen said, it's not just your work that people have to get familiar with. They have to get familiar with keeping you, seeing you there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people get discouraged. Oh, I didn't make any money this way. I'm not doing that show. Now, I'll do three or four shows, and if I continue to do like three shows bad in a row, then I have to go, maybe that's, but I've been really, really super fortunate that I've just gradually increased just a little bit every year, and so that's why I keep doing it.
Also, it could be a good idea if you're just first starting out, if you do know another person that does conventions and tables, maybe to share a table with them. You can be next to them and you can see how it is. And
that's how I cut my costs on Heroes. I split, the table was 200 at that time. And I split, a buddy of mine, a writer, came down with me. We had $100 a piece, and we went 3 feet, 3 feet. And that's the way I made a profit off of it. Because I had nothing. I didn't even have a book. I did all my comics in mini print form and sold them for $1.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's no way I'm going to make any money out of it. I did. My commissions helped, you know. But
it's also interesting, though, too, because in these conventions, you actually learn from the people that you're next to.
Oh, yeah.
I remember one of our first New York Comic Cons, me and Karen, we were next to... We're next to Rafael Navarro. Then he brought in a friend who works for the Simpsons. And then all of a sudden, he just starts like being able to pitch this book like insane. Like, and he's bringing in all these people and just getting them and doing this awesome pitch. And we're just sitting there like in awe of like, holy crap, why can't I do that?
Yeah, that was the first New York Comic Con too.
I didn't even know that was possible.
I was like, ooh, he's a wizard.
And he was like, you like comics? Come this way. I was like, holy crap. And it depends on what you are, but you learn from the people that you're around too. So that's really important. Like some people might not be as energetic, but you should learn from each show. We have time for one more question. And we have one question. All right.
So I've been doing like a lot of writing, but I can't draw to save my life. I've been having a lot of trouble finding someone because I don't have a lot of money. So what would you recommend for like a writer trying to find an artist?
Well, first of all, everyone says that they can't draw. Like when they're at that level, but seriously, if
Harvey Pekar couldn't draw.
If you look at the web comics that are some of the top web comics, they're like stick figures. Like seriously, and they get a lot of hits and they're very popular. So you might want to try a little bit, but if you feel like it's not working, like I would say, because I love being like a writer and an artist, I feel like you have true ownership over that. And I think collaborations are great too. Like it's really nice to be able to work with somebody if you find the right person, and that's the hard part. If you don't find the right person, it can be a struggle.
Yeah.
And it really has to be it's like a marriage at that point. It's like two minds combined, you know, that level. Like that, seriously, you gotta be thinking direct with them. If they're off a little bit, that's when, you know how if you have a project with somebody, like even in high school or something, like a science project, you end up doing the whole thing, so the other person doesn't even get it. You know, it's stuff like that. So you gotta find the right person, or I really think working by yourself, at least starting out, maybe try drawing it and try getting your idea out there. I know if it's a struggle right now, you only get, like with art, you only get better by doing more. You don't get worse by doing, you know, like you don't become a worse artist by drawing every day. So I guess other ways of finding, if you really feel like you can't find an artist, I guess I've never actually tried to look for an artist on myself. So I know there's like some online forums and DeviantArt, and you can try to approach somebody that way.
Do you pitch to artists?
No.
I mean, that's what you got to do. So being an artist who has been pitched to by writers, you just look for younger artists who you can see might have some talent. A lot of those guys are just willing to do anything, just like you. Like, hey, I want to just get on something so I can have a product to show people that I am an illustrator. So again, for that, you're looking at Deviant, all kinds of social media. Just put yourself out there. Hey, I'm a writer. I'm looking for an artist. I have a writer that works in our studio. When he's not working with us exclusively, he's online looking for artists who are looking for work. And a lot of the times, they'll pair together and find a studio who's maybe looking to do Kickstarters and stuff like that. So that, yeah, initially you guys don't have money to pay each other, but if you can find a studio who's like, hey, you guys got a nice little product together, we'll kickstart this, and then you're on your way. So your next step is to, while you're at these kind of shows, just go around and look for some, I know there's young talent in here. Just, you know, hey, I'm a writer, you know, here's my card, I got this idea, we could kick around if you're willing, stuff like that. It works, not for everyone, but it does work for some people.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's hear for everyone up here. Everyone here is at the convention, Artist Alley, real quick. Where can they find us?
Everybody say your table numbers. Yeah. I'm Carolyn at N5.
Brian Turner, P3.
I'm right across from them at M4. Also, I just wanted one more real quick plug. I'm sitting in for Don Griffin today. Don had a knee injury, but both Don and I are part of a website called Webcomic Alliance, just like it's spelled, .com, where we have articles and podcasts where we talk about this very subject. So it's totally free. We have articles and podcasts. I'm sure if Don was here, she would plug the heck out of it.
Yes.
I don't plug it nearly as much. So if you guys have any questions about any of this, come to our tables. I'm more than willing to go into more details, or if you have any more questions and things like that.
Awesome. Right. Thank you, everybody. I'm Joe Carbale. JoeCarbale.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. That was another hot one. That was another hot one. Bring you from the sights and sounds of OzCon is Other Side of the Table and Lessons from Curators. We did it again. We did it again. I thought it was great.
And we hope to do more. I mean, I'm going to try to get as much of that panel out there as we can. I think it's great, again, to get that variety with different people, and everyone has great, great advice, because a lot of these people I've seen at conventions for years and years, and you learn something each time that you're at the table. Every time, I'm still learning stuff. Still learning different techniques.
There's a lot of great things that was said that I can reflect upon on that panel. I liked hearing about people's pitches, how it is when they when they get rejected or when they seal the deal. I like hearing how people just were able to connect with the audience or connect with like people just passing by, because we're really just meeting strangers out there, and we're trying to get our books in their hands. And you know, it's really cool, and I don't know, it's fun to hear people's different techniques about how to do that, how to handle that,
And I felt the audience was really, really great and receptive towards all that, too. I thought it was a damn good time. Damn good time. It's a hot time. It's a hot time here.
It's hot because it's summer and it's July now. And wow. Like, do you know that we're like halfway through this year?
I hope so. I hope so.
Yes.
All I can see is like September and October in my mind for some reason.
I hope it doesn't. I actually want it to kind of chill out a little bit because I have some stuff I need to do before the fall conventions. But yeah, quick note about conventions. Joe and I will be at Small Press Expo this year. We will be at Baltimore Comic Con this year. And I think Baltimore actually comes before SPX, like a week or two before. They're all lined up. So we're going to be at Baltimore, Small Press Expo, and we'll be at New York Comic Con. Plus, we're doing the Blood Drive again this fall. I think that's October 29th, I believe. And that's in D.C. near Tacoma Park, Maryland, near the Tacoma Metro. So, you know, we're going to be around. We're going to be traveling. We're going to do New York. That's the big one, of course. And we're at booth 1162. I have that number memorized, permanently tattooed on my brain. Because we have had that spot for a couple years, and it's cool to retain that spot. And people remember us. They're like, I remember you. I know where you're at. So that's always really great. So we'll be seeing you guys on tour. Again, Baltimore Small Press Expo and New York Comic Con. We'll be around. We'll be looking for you, and hopefully you'll be looking for us. Because we only have one spot to go, and you can walk around everywhere you want. So you come and find us. And and you can always pay attention to everything that we're doing. We have the blog up at curls-studio.com. And we have an art show actually up right now at the Tacoma Park Community Center. It's the Cartoonist Draw Blood art show. And that's up until September 4th. So please get on out anytime to Tacoma Park and see all of this lovely, awesome comic art up on the walls. Over 10 different artists we worked with to put that show together.
That's right. And of course, the show is brought to you by Astray Productions. Check them out at astrayproductions.com. Check out my work at joecarabello.com. Also, goastray.tumblr.com. Also, one-shots.com. And now you can also check out my photo work on Instagram at joecarabello_photography. Make it simple. Make it ready. Make it awesome. Also, mondaymistress.com, my band. Enjoy them. Carolyn also has a website, curls-studio.com. Put a slash on it, put curls, you have her comic strip curls. Also check her out on everything, at Karen Bilewski, KarenBilewski.com, in the world.
Yes, that's- and also please check out Brian Turner and Chris Flick. Thanks guys for joining us on the show today and at AwesomeCon.
That's right. CarolynJoeShow.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, world, be excellent to each other. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
Let them know.
You're bona fide.